KSDP, 8:30 a.m. in Sandpoint, K201DA, 88.1.
From New York, this is Democracy Now!
Over 3,000 people from over 50 countries, completely peaceful, nonviolent, a show of collective humanity saying enough is enough, break the siege, allow humanitarian aid in, and to also let the Palestinian people know that they are not alone.
Thousands are arriving in Egypt for the global march to Gaza. We'll speak with one of the participants, Hala Rarat. She's the former Arab language spokesperson for the State Department. She was the first to resign the Biden State Department over Gaza policy. Then, President Trump's deployed more troops against immigrant right protests in Los Angeles than in Syria and Iraq. But protests are spreading to other cities like Chicago, where Trump is sending armed ICE tactical teams. We'll speak with Democratic Congress member Delia Ramirez. She's the daughter of Guatemalan immigrants and recently questioned Homeland Security Secretary Kristi Noem.
Your department is out of control, but you're responsible. You have betrayed the sacred fundamentals of your oath. And I believe to my core that you are not fit to hold the office. And I again, to your face, demand your immediate resignation. And I put it and place it on the record.
Then to Los Angeles, where immigrant workers and families are feeling the impact of ICE raids.
My father was supposed to see my sister Frederick today. We're extremely sad to not know where he is.
What's a day in the life of immigrant workers in Los Angeles like as troops flood the streets? All that and more coming up. Welcome to Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. An Air India commercial flight crashed into a residential area of the northwestern Indian city of Ahmedabad minutes after taking off. The London-bound Boeing 787-8 plane had at least 242 people on board. AP's reporting there appeared to be no survivors from the crash. Boeing's been plagued by major aviation disasters in recent years, but it's the first such incident on the 787 aircraft. Fear is growing in the Middle East that Israel soon launch an attack on Iran. The U.S. has already begun pulling some non-essential personnel out of the region, including at the U.S. Embassy in Baghdad. Iran's defense minister threatened to target U.S. bases, quote, if a conflict is imposed on us, unquote. Israel appears to be preparing to attack Iran, even though the U.S. and Iran are continuing to hold talks on Iran's nuclear program. Another round of negotiations are set for Sunday. Earlier today, the International Atomic Energy Agency declared Iran in breach of its nonproliferation obligations for the first time in almost 20 years. This all comes as Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu faces a growing political crisis at home. Earlier today, Netanyahu's government narrowly survived a vote to dissolve the Knesset. In related news, former CIA analyst Asif Rahman has been sentenced to 3 years in prison for leaking classified details last year about Israeli plans to strike Iran in Gaza. Israeli forces have killed over 120 Palestinians over the past day, including many at aid sites, bringing the official death toll to over 55,000 in Gaza, though that figure is believed to be a vast undercount. Gaza's media office has accused the Israeli military of, quote, perpetuating a policy of starvation and deliberately targeting and killing starving people seeking food, unquote. Criticism is growing of the shadowy U.S.-backed Gaza Humanitarian Foundation, which took over aid operations in Gaza. The Center for Constitutional Rights has notified the group of its potential legal liability for complicity in Israel's war crimes and genocide against Palestinians. Earlier today, the GHF accused Hamas of attacking a bus killing five of its aid workers near Khan Yunis. In other news from Gaza, the Palestinian doctor Ala Al-Najjar has arrived in Italy with her 11-year-old son Adam Al-Najjar, who will receive medical treatment. A recent Israeli strike killed the doctor's husband, also a doctor, and her nine other children. Before leaving Gaza, Adam described the attack.
We were at home. Everything was normal. Then they launched a missile at our building. Smoke came out. Then another missile hit us and leveled the entire building to the ground. There were a group of energy panels on the roof. They all collapsed to the ground. Only one or two left. All my brothers were killed. My father too. May God have mercy on him.
In the occupied West Bank, Israeli forces killed two Palestinian brothers Tuesday during a massive military raid on the city of Nablus. The Palestinian Red Crescent Society said it treated more than 80 people in Nablus with injuries. On Wednesday, Israeli special forces also killed a man near the town of Tamun. A federal judge will hear California's request today to limit the presence of National Guard and Marines deployed by President Trump to Los Angeles to just guarding federal buildings. National Guard troops have been involved in detaining civilians and have been accompanying immigration agents on their L.A. raids, provoking fear and chaos across L.A. Community-led protests continued for a sixth-day Wednesday. Downtown Los Angeles was under curfew for a second night. This comes amidst reports that families arrested in L.A. ICE raids have been held in basements with limited access to food and water, and that some detainees have been transferred out of state to Texas, as local facilities were not prepared for the surge in new detainees. Relatives of abducted Angelinos say they have no idea where their loved ones have been taken or what their condition is. This is Kimberly Hernandez, whose father's now missing after a raid on the car wash where he worked.
We're extremely sad to not know where he is. We have not been able to find him, and this is unfair. We would like justice for him, and we would stop. We would like to live without the fear of being detained at all times.
Meanwhile, the U.S. attorney in Los Angeles announced criminal federal charges against two demonstrators Wednesday and threatened to come after more people who were exercising their right to protest.
This is just the two cases we have been able to charge now. We are looking at hundreds of people. We have video. We have FBI collecting video. We are collecting body cam. We're collecting social media. We're collecting everything.
It's believed ICE has arrested more than 300 immigrants in Los Angeles since the latest actions have begun. Protests are against attacks on immigrants are gaining steam across the U.S., hitting at least 35 cities. In Washington state, the mayor of Spokane imposed a citywide curfew on Wednesday amidst protests there. The raids are continuing, too. In Nebraska, dozens of people were detained at a meat production plant in Omaha. Meanwhile, in D.C., Republican Senator Josh Hawley of Missouri said he's launching an investigation into the group CHRLA, that's Coalition for Humane Immigrant Rights Los Angeles, accusing it of, quote, bankrolling the unrest, unquote. In response, CHRLA said, quote, "We will not be intimidated for standing with immigrant communities and documenting the inhumane manner that our community is being targeted," unquote. In more related news, Republican House lawmakers have launched a separate probe into CHRLA and 200 other nonprofits serving immigrants, accusing the groups of abetting the, quote, "Biden-Harris administration's historic border crisis," unquote. Some of the other targeted groups include Make the Road New York, Council on American Islamic Relations, or CARE, and Haitian Bridge Alliance. Meanwhile, U.S. troops stationed at the southern border have begun detaining immigrants in another escalation of military authority. Troops are generally barred from civilian law enforcement under the Posse Comitatus Act. Authorities in Republican-led states are attempting to charge people with military trespassing for entering so-called defense zones, even if they do so unknowingly. President Trump is claiming a trade agreement has been reached between the U.S. and China, but details remain sketchy. The deal, which is still under review, reportedly would reduce tariffs and give the U.S. access to Chinese rare earth elements and magnets used in cars, semiconductors and smartphones. The U.S. will ease restrictions on some exports and will no longer seek to bar Chinese international students. In shocking court testimony Tuesday, the former Brazilian president, Jair Bolsonaro, denied involvement in alleged plot to overthrow his successor, Luiz Inácio Lula da Silva, but admitted to engaging in conversations about alternative strategies to staying in power after he lost his bid for re-election, including declaring a state of siege. Bolsonaro's accused of discussing a plot to kill Lula, as well as Justice Alexandre de Moraes, now the judge in this case. The World Food Program is warning several areas near the Sudanese capital of Khartoum are at risk of famine due to years of fighting. This is the World Food Program's Laurent Becerra speaking from the port of Sudan.
Several areas in the south are at risk of famine. Sudanese communities have been on the front lines hosting the displaced, but they are now at a breaking point. With returns expected to heavily damage areas like Khartoum, pressure on overstretched resources will intensify. We are deeply concerned, and meeting the basic needs, especially food, will be critical and is urgent.
Multiple nights of anti-immigrant race riots have rattled the Northern Ireland town of Ballymena in the wake of a sexual assault accusations against two teenagers who are believed to be from Romania. Violence and arson in the nightly riots have gotten so bad some residents have taken to writing their ethnicity on signs outside their homes or displaying a British flag to avoid being targeted. Some residents of immigrant backgrounds have fled for their safety. Back in the U.S., a federal judge ruled Wednesday the Trump administration cannot keep Columbia University graduate Palestinian activist Mahmoud Khalil locked up over his political advocacy and that his continued detention is causing Khalil irreparable harm. Judge Michael Farbiars gave the Trump administration 40 hours to appeal his latest order, meaning Khalil, a green card holder, could be released as early as Friday. However, in another challenge to Khalil's freedom, the judge maintained the Columbia graduate could still be subject to detainment over Trump administration claims he failed to disclose membership in various organizations in his permanent residency application. Mahmoud Khalil's been locked up in a Louisiana immigration prison for 3 months, missing the birth and first weeks of his newborn son's life. Hunger strikers at City University of New York ended their fast Wednesday after 16 days of public protest and teach-ins and after raising $30,000 for families in Gaza. This is one of the CUNY activists, Connor Coco Tomas Reed.
We're now calling upon people to shift their energies from this hunger strike to engage in the myriad forms of struggle that are happening in New York City. So this is court watch for our immigrant family and friends. This is blocking and resisting attempts at ICE raids and deportations. This is challenging the housing laws that are evicting more and more people in New York. This is making sure that abortion rights and gender affirming care are remain legal and accessible here in New York City. So we're calling for the CUNY hunger strike for Gaza to convert into a liberation summer, and we invite people to become a part of it.
Elsewhere in New York, police arrested dozens of activists as over 200 Palestinian and Jewish New Yorkers led the occupation of the Maersk office building in Manhattan, demanding the shipping company halt the transportation of F-35 fighter jet parts to Israel. This is Naif from the Palestinian Youth Movement.
These fighter jets
The Environmental Protection Agency has proposed repealing Biden-era federal limits on greenhouse gas emissions from power plants and weakening a separate Biden regulation on pollutants, including mercury. Scientists warn the moves will trigger the greatest increase in pollution in decades. It's the latest deregulatory action taken by EPA Administrator Lee Zeldin, who claims he's fighting against the, quote, climate change cult, unquote. The Democratic National Committee has forced out David Hogg as vice chair after the 25-year-old gun control activist threatened to support primary challengers to Democratic incumbents he viewed to be, quote, asleep at the wheel, unquote. The DNC plans to hold a revote for vice chair, but Hogg does not plan to run. In news from Capitol Hill, the House is expected to vote today to allow the White House to claw back $9.4 billion already appropriated by Congress. This includes $1.1 billion in cuts to the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, which provides funding to NPR and PBS. and a Manhattan jury on Wednesday convicted disgraced Hollywood mogul Harvey Weinstein of sexual assault after he was retried following the overturning of his 2020 conviction. The jury, however, acquitted Weinstein on another charge and failed to reach a decision on a third charge of third-degree rape, which jurors are continuing to deliberate on today. One of the three plaintiffs in the retrial, Miriam Haley, spoke after the jury concluded again Weinstein had forcibly performed oral sex on her in 2006.
To survivors of sexual assault, you matter, your story matters, your voice matters, and you're not alone. Thank you.
Harvey Weinstein has also been convicted of sex crimes in California and sentenced to 16 years in prison. And those are some of the headlines. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. In Gaza, Israeli forces have killed more than 120 Palestinians over the past day, including many at aid sites, bringing the official death toll to over 55,000, though that figure is believed to be a vast undercount. Gaza's government media office has accused the Israeli military of, quote, perpetuating a policy of starvation and deliberately targeting and killing starving people seeking food, unquote. This comes as thousands from around the world are arriving in Egypt for the global march to Gaza to call for the end to Israel's genocide against Palestinians. Independent Egyptian news outlet Matamasser reports Egyptian security forces detained and deported several Turkish citizens outside their Cairo hotel, where they were spotted carrying Palestinian flags. Dozens who flew to Egypt for the march have also reportedly been turned back as they arrive at the Cairo airport, including 40 Algerian nationals this morning and an all-female Tunisian delegation. Dropsite News shared video of activists chanting as they were deported at the airport. The activists were chanting, shame, shame. They sold Gaza for a dollar, implying the Egyptian government sold out Gaza. Egypt's foreign ministry released a statement Wednesday nominally, quote, welcoming foreign delegations of the global march to Gaza, which plans to bring humanitarian aid to the Rafah border crossing in Egypt, but warned they should seek permission to cross the Sinai Desert to Rafah. Democracy Now! Spoke to one of the people planning to participate in the march, Hala Rarit. She's an 18-year career diplomat who resigned from the State Department over the Biden administration's Gaza policy. She was the first State Department diplomat to publicly resign. She'd served as Arabic language spokesperson for the State Department. We spoke to her briefly on the show Tuesday, then did an extended interview. In part two, I asked her to elaborate on what made her decide to go from spokesperson to resign spokesperson to actually participating in the global march to Gaza.
Thank you so much for having me, Amy. Well, fundamentally, it's the exact same answer. Diplomacy, justice, peace, equality, all of the values that I grew up with, that I cherished, all the values that we're supposed to hold dear as Americans, these are the exact same principles and reasons why I am going, why I resigned, why I became a diplomat, why I resigned, and now why I'm joining the march. Because again, as I mentioned in part one, we cannot, as human beings, turn the blind eye to injustice. We just cannot. What type of world are we going to be living in? What type of world are we going to be allowing our children to grow up in if we stand by while an entire civilian population is forcibly starved? I'm going to say that again, forcibly starved under all of our watchful eye. Children dying of malnutrition. This is not propaganda. These are facts. We have the images. We have all of the details of these children dying of starvation while others that are trying to get them food get shot at. Simultaneously, the population continues to be bombarded. It's an absolute affront to international law, an affront to diplomacy that I dedicated my entire life to. And again, we can't speak anymore. We can't just talk and talk and talk and allow governments to take advantage of the cover of diplomacy to continue the injustice. At this point, it is power to the people. The people are uniting in a show of solidarity. And as you mentioned, Amy, we'll be going to Egypt and doing a walk to Rafah, representing humanity, over 3,000 people from over 50 countries, completely peaceful, nonviolent, a show of collective humanity saying enough is enough, break the siege, allow humanitarian aid in, and to also let the Palestinian people know that they are not alone. They are not alone. We are going to be continuing these efforts until the siege is broken.
Philippe Lazzarini, the UNRWA Commissioner General, posted on his official X account, quote, "The state of Israel must lift the siege and allow the UN safe and unhindered access to bring in aid and distribute it safely. This is the only way to avert mass starvation, including among 1 million children. Today, there are 12,000 UNRWA staff who continue providing health, sanitation and psychosocial services under the most brutal and adverse environment. Our warehouses outside Gaza are full with a volume of assistance equivalent to 6,000 trucks, letting food rot and medicine deliberately expire would simply be obscene," Lazzarini wrote. And it's interesting to note, Chala, that one of the responses of the Israeli government to the Gaza Freedom Flotilla was that there are proper ways to bring in humanitarian aid, and they weren't following them as they attempted to bring in aid and challenge the siege. If you can respond to Lazzarini, to Israel, and especially from your position as a longtime former spokesperson for the State Department, if you can talk about the U.S. role in all of this.
I'll respond to the Israeli point first, specifically about the Gaza Humanitarian Fund that they've set up, that they propped up, potentially with Israeli intelligence, because I want your audience to understand something very, very clearly. This is a propaganda tool. And I say this as a former spokesperson, as someone who worked in the propaganda arm, the public relations arm of the U.S. government. I thought I was doing good at the time. If you want to feed malnourished children, you do not give them a box of pasta. You do not give them a box of rice. This is not how you treat malnourishment. This is not how you treat starvation. This is strictly not only a public relations plot, but it is additionally a financial ploy because people are benefiting. This is a private firm that was contracted. People are literally making money off of other people's starvation. An additional layer is that we've seen with our own eyes people getting shot at, the Palestinian civilians getting shot at in their desperation of trying to obtain food from the Gaza Humanitarian Fund. It is part of a systematic effort to ethnically cleanse, to potentially wipe out the population. There are irreversible damages made from a population, a civilian population that is malnourished, that is unable to properly grow. You have an entire generation that is stunted, and that is by design. When I was a spokesperson, Amy, to your point about the UN statement, about allowing the UN to do its job. As a spokesperson, I was expected to say the line of UNRWA, you know, is corrupt or UNRWA is in on it, UNRWA is full of Hamas. I asked for proof. I asked for proof for everything that I was expected to say. I had a top secret security clearance. Even if I wasn't authorized to share that proof on TV, all I asked is, you convince me of that, I will go on TV and I will say it. Spoiler alert, I never saw any proof because there is none. If there was proof that the UN was somehow in cahoots with Hamas, we would have all seen it by now. This is, again, a public relations ploy to try to divert attention from the facts on the ground, which is that forced starvation is being used as a tool of war, and that is fundamentally a war crime. The flotilla was trying to break that because governments are refusing to act. And now the Global March is going to act to also try to break that, because we will keep pressuring governments to actually do their jobs until they do them.
Chalera, if you can talk about exactly, give us more details on this march, the Global March to Gaza, to the Rafah border crossing in Egypt, and talk about the Egyptian government's response as well. How many people are going on it?
Thanks so much for giving me the opportunity to talk about it. It is really a grassroots movement, and I have to say I'm not part of the organizing committee, but I was inspired by them. They are a group of peace activists, of lawyers, of doctors, basically people from all walks of life that have been, all of us have been talking about what can we actually do as opposed to just talk. And weeks ago, if not months ago, I'm told that a core group of organizers got together. I found out about it not too long ago and decided to do whatever I can to support it. And so they approached, this core organizing committee approached the Egyptian government formally through various Egyptian embassies around the world. They met with Egyptian ambassadors around the world in European capitals and Canada. They gave them formal notices through diplomatic notes. So the Egyptian authorities are fully aware. They've received initial positive feedback from some of the Egyptian diplomatic missions, I'm told. And they were also, it was confirmed that they would receive a response. The march would receive a response from Cairo in terms of a permit for a march at some point. The good news is that we have not received a no, which I think is obviously a good sign. And I want to stress that this march does not at all aim to undermine, because there have been some concerns that I want to alleviate. It's not at all aimed to undermine Egyptian authority or Egyptian sovereignty. It is quite the opposite. It is very much in line with Egypt's diplomatic efforts. Egypt has been calling on an end to the siege. Egypt has been calling on a ceasefire. They've been in the negotiations to try to achieve a ceasefire. And so this is in support of that. And we're going to be landing, as I mentioned, on Thursday in Cairo. Some participants are already there. It's going to be, the number is increasing every time I speak to them, but definitely over 3,000 from over 50 countries. And we're going to make our way from Cairo to Al Arish in the Sinai. And then from Friday, we're going to start walking from Al Arish to Rafah. We're going to be walking for 2 or 3 days in the Sinai desert. And then once we arrive to Rafah, we are not planning on storming the border. This, again, is a purely peaceful, nonviolent march in solidarity with the Palestinian people. We are going to camp out in Rafah, and we're going to try to make a statement of collective humanity. We're going to, again, be representing the world with our over 50 delegations, and we're going to be insisting that this will keep happening over and over again until the siege is broken. We will camp out for a few days to try to hopefully make that statement loud and clear and try to effect some change until we return back to Cairo.
Are there government officials who will be in this delegation, or former spokespeople like yourself, you a former State Department spokesperson?
I know that there are European members of parliament that have joined the march. They've also, others have also signed letters in support of the march. I know that there are current diplomats, I'm not sure from which countries, but I know that there are current diplomats that are also joining the march. Again, peace activists, lawyers, doctors, artists. It is, for me, honestly, Amy, it's a beautiful show of human solidarity. And when I see all of this injustice in the world, whether it's in Los Angeles, whether we're talking about kidnapping people and sending them to El Salvador, this gives me hope. People from all around the world, they're not benefiting from this. They're leaving their jobs. They're leaving their families behind. But they're standing together and saying, this is not okay. It's not okay that children are starving. It's not okay that children are being bombarded every day. Illegal occupation cannot exist in 2025. And this, to me, already gives me hope. It's a show of a beautiful human unity, and this is what we need. And just like the flotilla inspired millions around the world, we're hoping that this march inspires millions around the world, because fundamentally, this is the way things change. I served in South Africa as a diplomat, and I learned so much from that experience. But fundamentally, it was the power of the people that ended apartheid in South Africa. And the movement is underway as well for Palestine.
I wanted to ask you about a former colleague of yours, former State Department spokesperson Matthew Miller under President Biden, who recently made headlines when he admitted Israel had committed war crimes in Gaza, something he never said from the State Department podium.
I don't think it's a genocide, but I think it is, without a doubt, true that Israel has committed war crimes.
You wouldn't have said that at the podium.
Yeah, look, because when you're at the podium, you're not expressing your personal opinion. You're expressing the conclusions of the United States government.
So I'm wondering if you can get, if you can respond to what the former State Department spokesperson under Biden, Matt Miller, is saying on Sky News. Did it surprise you, Hela?
I can absolutely respond, and thank you for giving me the opportunity. It is absolutely disgusting. That's it. I'm going to be very blunt, Amy, because I worked in the exact same office as Matthew Miller. The reports that I mentioned that I wrote on a daily basis when I was a spokesperson, they went up that chain. They went up to global public affairs. I knew he knew because I was drafting reports showing the war crimes. When I was asked to spread those lies, I said, I cannot spread lies. I swore an oath to the U.S. Constitution when I became a diplomat. I had a top secret security clearance. That means we don't violate laws. We don't violate U.S. laws. We don't violate international laws. And if you are a true patriot, if you are truly a diplomat, you do not do as you are told when you know it is illegal. You do not do as you're told when you know it is immoral, when it is inhumane. And fundamentally as well, when you know it is a threat to U.S. national security, which we all knew, which I was also documenting, as far as I'm concerned, Matthew Miller has blood on his hands because he knew what he was doing was wrong. And why was he doing it? For careerism. I'm going to be very blunt, Amy, because I've perhaps I'm not as diplomatic as I should be or as I used to be. But it's careerism, and the only reason why he admitted it now, again, on TV, is because he thinks it's going to make him look good, where in reality, it makes him look terrible because everybody knew he was lying. But that does not make a good diplomat, certainly not. And fundamentally, I think it's going to haunt him for the rest of his life, whereas I have a very clean conscience, and I'll continue to try to do good in the world. It's not about a paycheck. It's about the type of world we live in, and we want our children to grow up in.
That was Hela Rarit, 18-year career diplomat who resigned from the State Department over the Biden administration's Gaza policy. We spoke with her Tuesday about joining the Global March to Gaza, which begins today in Cairo and heads to the Rafah border crossing in Egypt. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org. I'm Amy Goodman. CNN's reporting President Donald Trump spoke to Israeli Prime Minister Netanyahu in a phone call this week and urged him to end the war in Gaza, among other topics. For more, we're joined by Democratic Congressmember Delia Ramirez of Chicago, who's introduced legislation called the Block the Bombs Act that would withhold the transfer of offensive weapons to Israel and demand Israel's compliance with U.S. and international law. Congressmember Ramirez joins us now from Capitol Hill. Can you lay out what's in the bill, Congressmember?
Yeah. Amy, first of all, let me start by telling you that everything is connected. You just heard that from Hala. It is so important to understand that in this precise moment, what Bibi Netanyahu wants is to continue to escalate this ground invasion and starvation of Palestinians to absolutely take over Gaza and destroy Palestinian life. That's what he wants to do. Donald Trump wants to help him, and he wants to redevelop the land. Block the Bombs Act bill is critical and urgent. It's why we have 23 sponsors as we speak right now. It withholds a set of offensive weapons that you and I both know have been used repeatedly by Bibi Netanyahu with the authority of Donald Trump and previous administrations to be able to bomb children. So what this bill does is withholds the set of offensive weapons, and it says that if Bibi Netanyahu, if the Israeli government wants to use any of these weapons, it would have to prove that it is not violating U.S. international and human rights law, which you and I both know is very difficult for a fascist like Bibi Netanyahu with his extremist friend, the duo, Donald Trump.
How much support do you have for cutting off offensive weapons support to Israel?
Amy, it's a bill, not a resolution. I'm certainly a co-sponsor of the joint resolutions that we have seen of this approval. But as of today, there are 23 members of Congress who have signed on to this bill. 22 original co-sponsors, including 3 Jewish members as original co-leads and co-sponsors, and we have a number of others from all over the country. We are talking to people every single day. There are people across the states that are calling and saying, Congress member, if you believe, if you are a pro-peace member of Congress, if you are tired of seeing the death toll and starvation of Palestinians, you must sign on to block the bombs bill. And I believe that more will go ahead and add on to the support. This is common sense, Amy. We can't keep watching this and go to sleep and act like we have no responsibility. Silence is complicity. We will wake up years from now and ask ourselves, what the heck did we do in this moment? Block the Bombs Act bill gives us an opportunity to finally assert our power as Congress.
Representative Delia Ramirez, we're going to ask you to stay with us. Democratic Congressmember from Illinois, daughter of Guatemalan immigrants. When we come back, we'll ask her about how Chicago is one of the 5 Democratic cities where President Trump's announced he's sending armed ICE tactical teams, and how thousands of protesters have been marching through the streets of Chicago this week. Stay with us.
Living is easy with eyes closed. Misunderstanding all we see. It's getting hard to be someone, but it all works out. It doesn't matter much to me. Déjame llevarte hacia donde voy. Strawberry fields. Nada es real. Y nada. Pensar campos de fresa por siempre. No one I think is in my tree. I mean, I must be high on low. That is, you know, you
Strawberry Fields Forever, a rendition of La Santa Cecilia here in our Democracy Now! Studio. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. President Trump's deployed more U.S. troops against immigrant rights protests in Los Angeles than are currently in Syria and Iraq, according to recent Pentagon figures. But the protests continue and are expanding, like in Chicago, where thousands marched in the streets this week. Chicago is one of 5 Democratic cities where Trump has announced he'll be sending armed ICE tactical teams. Today, a federal judge will hear California's request to limit the activities of the National Guard and Marines deployed by Trump to Los Angeles to just guarding federal buildings. National Guard troops have also been involved in detaining civilians and have been accompanying immigration agents on their L.A. raids, provoking fear and chaos across the city. We're going to talk about that in just a minute, about the community-led protest continuing for a 6-day in downtown L.A., which saw a curfew for a second night. For more, we continue with the Chicago Democratic Congressmember Delia Ramirez. She's the daughter of Guatemalan immigrants, recently questioned Homeland Security Secretary Kristi Noem during a congressional hearing.
Your department is out of control, but you're responsible. You have betrayed the sacred fundamentals of your oath. And I believe to my core that you are not fit to hold the office. And I again, to your face, demand your immediate resignation. And I put it and place it on the record.
Yes, that's Democratic Congressmember Delia Ramirez questioning Homeland Security Secretary Kristi Noem. Congressmember, thank you for staying with us as you stand with us from the Capitol Rotunda. If you can talk about your response to President Trump escalating. We've seen what's happened on the streets of L.A., where he's sent out thousands of troops, National Guard, hundreds of Marines. Now he's expanding to 5 more cities, apparently. One of them is yours, Chicago, where he's sending out tactical ICE teams, and thousands of protesters have already begun protesting this week in your city. First, do you know what these tactical ICE teams are? Respond to what President Trump is doing.
Amy, what you are seeing is the beginning of fascism, point blank. He is sending the military to the cities that would dare to have dissent and resistance to what you are seeing. Mass deportations, the robbing of mothers from their children. And he is intentionally going to the cities where we know people are organizing and saying enough is enough. You don't get to trick mothers into text messages just to arrest them, throw them into freight elevators and shove them into vans as mass agents take them and take them away from their family. What he is about is control, suppressing dissent in order to dismantle resistance. The threats of sending these special ICE teams to Chicago, to Seattle, and other cities is about making sure that he can dismantle any organizing. But let's make sure we don't lose the plot here. The aggressor in this country is Donald Trump. Who we should be holding accountable are not people who are protesting the taking, the kidnapping, the abducting of their family, is the aggressor that serves as the United States president. And we have to understand what it is, because it's all interconnected. He, Bukele, Bibi Netanyahu want to rob us from our lives, want to suppress any dissent because they want our land. They want white supremacy to rule our countries. They want to rob us from our resources. And anyone who is willing to speak up, they are going to militarize to silence us. Everyone should be really worried. But at the same time, Amy, we cannot allow these fear tactics to win, which is why we cannot concede the power. Chicago is not going to stop protesting. We're going to continue to show up in the streets. We're going to monitor what is happening, and we're going to take a stand for our immigrant brothers and sisters.
Chicago is a sanctuary city. What does that mean?
It means that in the city of Chicago, in the state of Illinois, that local police does not help ICE agents harm, abduct, remove people. It means that people in Chicago are not going to be arrested for being undocumented. Immigrants are able to work, to shop, to go to church without the fear that the moment they leave their home, they will be abducted by a government who has refused to actually address the issues of immigration. And so as long as we have the leadership we have, as long as our community continues to stay out there, vigilant, building community, protesting the abductions, we will continue to be a sanctuary state.
What news do you have on ICE detaining children, separating families in broad daylight, arresting immigrants at their jobs, court hearings, terrorizing entire communities, also endangering everyone? Because when people are afraid to go to a health clinic, this is a problem for everyone. When people That's right. don't go to work, this is also a problem for their employers. Can you talk about how this cuts the response across the political spectrum?
Amy, it destabilizes everything. It destabilizes our schools when kids are not going to school, either themselves out of fear that when they come back, mom went to that court follow-up visit but then was detained, or mom worried that if she sends her child, ICE agents will present themselves and bully themselves through, and if that superintendent doesn't have the resources or the ability to stop them, they will take that child. We're talking about four-year-old children who are United States citizens, deported during cancer treatment. We are talking about employers, Home Depots, wholesale shoppers, communities across the country who are living in fear that anyone could be taken. These ICE agents don't know due process. They're not trained to understand how to be able to abide by the law, because the president and Secretary Noem are telling them, forget the laws. There is no rule of law when it comes to immigrants. So they're detaining U.S. citizens. Anyone who dares to dissent in this moment, they're sending the military to silence them. What is happening around the country should worry every one of us. Because here's the other thing, Amy. Let's be very clear. For fascists, they select a public enemy, and today is an immigrant. Tomorrow, literally tomorrow, is anyone they find undesirable. I have members of Congress in my committee who are filing legislation saying anyone who attempts to obstruct Donald Trump from doing what he wants should have their U.S. citizenship revoked if they're a United States citizen. All of us should be worried. It's destabilizing economies, destabilizing schools, people who are not going to the hospital and dying from fear of being deported in a hospital itself.
Congressmember, you are the only congressmember to say that your husband was undocumented when you became a member of Congress. He is a recipient now of DACA. If you can talk about whether you're concerned that with you being so outspoken, you, your family, your husband will be targeted. Yeah.
What you saw was LaMonica MacGyver attempting to provide oversight at a detention center. And then now they are going as far as not just charges, right, indicting her for doing her job. This government does not want people like me, like LaMonica, or anyone to actually hold them accountable. Of course there are concerns there. And of course a number of us are asking ourselves, what are the safety plans you have to have in place? But I am not going to concede the power of the people. I will do what I need to do to protect my family, but I'm going to continue to fight this fascist government who attempts to silence people like me, people like LaMonica MacGyver, members of Congress whose responsibility is to assert oversight in this moment. It's why we should be at these detention centers. It's why we should continue to support folks that are marching in these nonviolent marches. They will attempt to say that all sorts of things, that we're inciting violence. Donald Trump incited violence here in this building on January 6th. He is the aggressor. He is who should be accountable.
And of course, you're talking about the New Jersey Congressmember MacGyver, who wrapped her arms around the Newark mayor, Roz Baraka, as they were arresting him, although they've dropped the charges against him. I wanted to go to a different subject as we wrap up this discussion. The House is expected to vote today to allow the White House to claw back $9.4 billion already appropriated by Congress, including $1.1 billion in cuts to the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, which provides funding to PBS and NPR. NPR describes the proposal as the most serious threat ever faced by public broadcasting since the CPB was established in the 1960s under President Lyndon Johnson. Your response?
It is the biggest serious threat to national public broadcasting. It is what authoritarians do when they don't want people to report of what's happening on the ground. We should all be worried. Every single Democrat, but Republicans who want to uphold our Constitution, our democracy, should be voting against this rescission bill. It is dangerous. We have arrived to a moment that if we don't organize ourselves together and say enough is enough, I don't know how we turn back from it. It is absolutely dangerous. And Amy, everyone should be calling their member of Congress and demanding that they vote no on this rescission bill.
Finally, will you be protesting on Saturday? Will you be part of the No Kings protest as President Trump celebrates his 79th birthday with the estimates are something like $46 million military parade with Abrams tanks rolling through the streets of the Capitol where you work?
Amy, we're hearing is closer to $100 million now. He wants to waste $100 million of your taxpayer dollars while cutting Medicaid at the same time. I will be protesting in many ways. There are local things happening in my own district. I will be standing up with people, and I will make sure that our immigrants know that I am standing with them today, every single day.
Congressmember Delia Ramirez, Democrat, a congressmember from Chicago, Illinois, the daughter of Guatemalan immigrants. Next up to Los Angeles. What is a day in the life of an immigrant worker in Los Angeles like as troops flood the streets? More than 300 immigrants have been arrested just in the last week in L.A. alone. Stay with us.
I've been a lonely girl, but I'm ready. been a heart for hire. I've been a heart for hire. And my love's on the funeral pyre. Oh, my love's on the funeral pyre. When will you help me out? You can't even pick me out of the crowd.
Hungry Ghost by Linda Sagata of Hooray for the Riff Raff in our Democracy Now! Studio. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org. I'm Amy Goodman. We turn now to Los Angeles, where community-led protests have been ongoing for 6 days in response to President Trump's immigration crackdown. Protests began after ICE carried out a series of operations across Southern California last week. A curfew downtown L.A. remains in effect. Nearly 400 people have been arrested since protests began Friday. President Trump's taken the extraordinary step of federalizing the National Guard to deploy to L.A. and activating some 700 Marines over the objections of California Governor Newsom, who's now suing the administration. But at the center of this crisis are the immigrant workers, families, communities who've been directly impacted by the ICE crackdown. Hundreds have been arrested in L.A. over the last week alone. This is Kimberly Hernandez, whose father's now missing after a raid on a car wash where he worked.
We are extremely sad to not know where he is. We have not been able to find him, and this is unfair. We would like justice for him, and we would stop. We would like to live without the fear of being detained at all times.
As immigrant families are navigating this uncertainty, deciding whether or not to go to work, to go to school, to go to a health clinic, fearing for themselves and their families, we're joined in Pasadena, California, by Pablo Alvarado, co-executive director of Endelon, the National Day Laborer Organizing Network. Pablo, let's get right down to what is so personal for so many right now in the greater Los Angeles area. Describe the day in the life of an immigrant worker.
Good morning, Amy, and thank you for having me in your show. The life of an immigrant in Los Angeles and across this country, but particularly now in our city, is full of uncertainties. For a day laborer going to a Home Depot to seek work, to feed their families, it's full with a notion of uncertainties. It's not just that you don't know whether you're gonna find a job or not, whether you're gonna get paid or not, whether you're gonna have an accident at the workplace and receive proper medical care or not, is now whether you're going to be essentially arrested, detained, disappeared into this system of immigration that we have in this country. Families don't know whether they're going to see their parents when they leave in the morning to go to work. And people don't have any other choice because you have to provide for your family. So it's a lot of anguish. There's a lot of frustration. There's anger. There's fear. And all of these sentiments together have sparked protests all over Los Angeles, all over Southern California, not just in downtown Los Angeles. I know that people are focusing on downtown L.A. because that's where the violence oftentimes is taking place. But there have been protests in Downey, in Pasadena, in Santa Ana, in Monrovia, in Whittier, in many places, even in front of the hotels where the ICE agents are staying. So, yes, there's fear. There's that. All of those sentiments in our hearts, because the people that they're taking are members of our community. I'm going to read that because they have names, and their parents, their fathers, in the case of laborers, their fathers, their grandfathers, their sons. And you see, I remember Sergio Lopez, Ramiro Arce, Ramiro Toc, Daniel Lopez Pop. They have names.
Pablo, you've been organizing day laborers for over 20 years. The Wall Street Journal has a report. Last month, White House Deputy Chief of Staff Stephen Miller said during a meeting at the headquarters of ICE that officials should target Home Depots and 7-Eleven stores so they can detain and deport day laborers. You are part of, or rather, if you can talk about the Pasadena Job Center, which helps connect employers with workers, and the increased significance of this focus, not on murderers and rapists, but on job centers.
Well, it appears that, yes, ICE and all of the federal agencies that are collaborating together are indeed executing the orders that Stephen Miller gave, and they are systematically going to Home Depot. And yes, day laborers and worker centers have become part of the landscape on not just Los Angeles, but all of in major cities across the country. Immigrant families, day labor families are part of the socioeconomic fabric of every single community all over Los Angeles. I happen to live in Pasadena where the fires took place. I'm a mile and a half away from Altadena. We were impacted. There's a worker center here. And let me tell you what happened right after the fire. It was immigrant workers that came to our place telling us what I possess in this life is in my body right now. But not only I don't have a house anymore, but I don't have a job anymore because the house of my employer burned down. And yet, these are the very same people that are removing the debris. These are the same people that are remediating the homes of people adjacent to the fires. And yes, these are the people that are going to rebuild Los Angeles. In fact, it's impossible to rebuild Los Angeles without migrant labor. 40% of the workforce in the construction industry is migrant labor, and documented and undocumented. And this is the hypocrisy of what the hypocrisy we're fighting against all over this country. Our country is willing to accept the fruits of migrant labor, but is not willing to accept the humanity of people.
First fire and then ICE. That's what the people of Altadena and Pasadena have been exposed to. And as you were describing, Pablo, these workers are now exposed, I mean, to the toxic cleanups. They're the ones doing this cleanup. And you have Miller saying, we got to expand these arrests to 3,000 a day, which how can they do that but go to work sites and find active workers?
Well, they are saying that they are not going to go to other places that have been impacted by the fires. But they were here staying at the hotel in Pasadena. Unfortunately, the community, people from all walks of life, by the way, it's not just migrant families that are coming out to protest the presence of ICE in our communities. It's people from all walks of life that are coming. Soccer moms, I've never seen that. Protesting to protect the immigrant workers. We have the council members coming out, the political class, everybody coming out.
Before we end, you're from El Salvador. You fled El Salvador. Now President Trump is sending people back to El Salvador, where the president of El Salvador himself calls himself a dictator. If you can respond to this possibility and what people are facing when they're deported to the places where their very lives were threatened.
You know, your question reminds me about all of this narrative about gangs. And I just want to remind Americans that gangs are a creation of this country. And when gang members were deported to El Salvador, the gang problem was exported from the U.S. to El Salvador. And Well, Bukele has established a state of exception in El Salvador, and it appears that now Mr. Trump wants to import that state of exception to the United States, and it's unacceptable, and it's un-American, and we're going to fight it.
We're going to continue this conversation in Spanish and post it on our Spanish website at democracynow.org/es. I want to thank you, Pablo Alvarado, and remind people still hundreds of people from the United States have been deported to CECOT, the maximum security prison in El Salvador. Thank you.
Here comes that good-for-nothing brat of a boy. He's such a devil, I could whoop him with joy. He's been carousing at the burlicue. Just watch me teach him with the sole of my shoe. Small fry, strutting by the pool room. Small fry, should be in the school.